Double delight for the Dubs reaching both Leinster hurling and football finals. Cork go quietly about their business in the hurling, and what a qualifier we have lined up for a sellout Nolan Park this weekend. This is Talking GAA, I'm Dave O'Grady. We're going to be talking hurling with former Galway manager and tip hurler John McIntyre, and we'll have the football with freelance GAA correspondent Colleen Duffy. As always, you can email the show. We are theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Lots to come. But first, I'm delighted to be joined by Armagh and Cross McGlen senior footballer Aaron Kernan, who launched a GPA's association with Pips Charity. Now, Pips was established in 2003 following the suicides of 14 young people under the age of 18. Their aim is to save lives, offer advice and support those affected by suicide and self-harm. Aaron, thanks a million for joining us. For yourself and the GPA, you must be delighted to be involved. It's a real chance, I suppose, to promote positive mental health in Irish society.
Yeah. It was obviously the GPA did pick there's just a number of players from Northern Ireland that they were interested in taking part in our campaign, and I know they've done it also in the south of Ireland with Peter House, so it was hugely successful down there. And obviously I jumped at the chance of being part of something that can promote mental health well-being, but also can show that I suppose the GPA and Gaelic players in particular, they can be sort of role models throughout the country. And it was great for us to be able to come and speak out and try and see if we could bring it to the forefront of people's thinking.
Yeah, Desi Farrell was very positive about the whole initiative, and you mentioned there county footballers and hurlers, I mean, they're natural role models for people in their communities, and particularly younger people under the age of 18. And for yourself, that must be very special, because as you know, a lot of young people would look up to yourself.
Yeah, well, I think that was one of the I suppose initial links that Pips Charity felt that the GPA could come in and help out with. And obviously from a player point of view, particularly this time of year, whenever the GAA is to the forefront of the national media on TV and newspapers and radio and that, it was a great time for them to launch their campaign. And yeah, like I say, whenever we went in and we met the people at the head offices in Belfast the other day and spoke to them and seen what they do and how positive the outcome can be, no matter what your depression, your addiction is, whether it's drink or gambling or tough times at home or financially, whatever. So it was very humbling to go in and see it, because there's a lot of people who go in the doors of that of the unit, and it's a dark place, and for them to come out on the right side of it, if we can help in any small way to get even more people to pick up the phone, to talk to them, to use their services, well then definitely it's going to be a worthwhile venture for the GPA.
Yeah, fantastic. And from people from a sporting background as well, I mean, it's very important, because sport, I suppose, isn't always about your physical fitness. It's important to promote and, you know, educate people about mental health. There's still a little bit of a stigma in Ireland today, but it's important that people, particularly in sport as well, they have a healthy mind to go along with their physical body.
Yes, there is, and I think the impression that everyone would get if you see a GAA footballer or hurler out in the field there and he's moving well, you would think there's a man in good shape and life's going well for him, but that's not always the case. I know we've had a few very unfortunate issues this past few years with even inter-county footballers and hurlers throughout the country, where unfortunately they've taken their own lives, and obviously they had gotten to a dark place, and people maybe didn't realise how far it had gone. But I think one of the biggest inspirations that I would take would be my own club and county colleague Oisin McConville, and him coming and speaking about his own addiction issues with gambling, and for me to personally know him and how he's turned his life around and how positive it has now become, and the amount of people now that by becoming a counsellor himself that he is now helping, I think it's tremendous for him to face up to his demons the way he did, speak out about it, because it's definitely not easy. I know particularly teenagers and early 20s and that, people, young men in particular, would feel that it's a sign of weakness to be speaking out or to go looking for help, but that's not the case at all. it's never, nothing's ever too bad that you can't talk to someone or you can't seek help for it. And I think going in and seeing the actual, meeting the people in Pip's charity and that, and seeing exactly what they do and how easy it is to get in, to talk to them, to set up the process of was bringing you back to full mental health. It was great to get in and get seeing it. And like I say, if we can do anything at all, by speaking out about it now and encouraging people to not be afraid to pick up the phone, it's going to be a positive aspect leading into the future, along with the GPA players and both Peterhouse and Pip's charity.
There's no doubt about it, Will, and as you mentioned, Oisín McConville, hugely outspoken, and it's fantastic to see. A lot of people will take inspiration from that. For yourself now, going forward, Aaron, I know you've been quite busy the past few days as well. You've had a busy week, rather. You've been involved, I think, with Elvery's youth camps. No doubt there's a lot of potential of the young players coming through in Armagh.
Yeah, there is indeed. Again, that was another venture with the GAA and the GPA as well. Also, it was they run their cool camps yearly, and this was the Elvery's youth camps now, which has come in this year, which is basically targeting the 13 to 16 year olds. It's not really, we try not to call it even camps for the kids. It's a week's, suppose, induction into the life of what county football is. We do a bit of work regarding obviously your skills and your fitness work on the pitch, also a bit of speaking about the nutrition end of things, the conditioning end of things. But it's more trying to give the older age group and teenagers an even better reflection of what they can look forward to with a bit of hard work as they progress through the years. And yeah, it's been a good start for us so far. And again, it's something that I think as the years go on now, a bit like the cool camps, that it's just going to grow and grow every year. And I think it's another positive aspect for the GAA that, again, they're hitting out to another market.
Yes, I was just thinking about it there. You mentioned the age group, in fact, and the fact that you're educating them about, you know, the needs and from a nutrition point of view and that kind of thing. I suppose it really prepares the young players for what it is like at intercounty footballer, because we do see a lot of young players around the country tend to drop off from playing Gaelic games at in around the ages of 18, 19 and 20 when college comes around. But I suppose this helps them, shows them what path they can possibly go on.
Yeah, it definitely does. And there's a fine line with the whole thing in that you don't want to force feed them, you don't want to ram stuff down their throat that they sicken them, because at the end of the day, the most important thing is their skill on the football field. That's number one. And on top of that, they also need to be enjoying their football. If they're not enjoying their football and enjoying GAA, they will fall off. So, like I say, it's a balancing act with the whole lot, and that you're trying to give them all the information and trying to point them in the right direction, and hoping that as they pick up on it, that their love and their hunger for GAA grows, and that their enthusiasm for wanting to make it to the top level, that will grow with it. And like I say, by the time they're hitting that age where maybe it's a drop-off point, well, they have a better idea of what it's going to take to make the step up from minor to under 21 to senior at county level. But even just your physical well-being, you know, regarding your diet or keeping healthy and keeping fit, definitely it's not going to do anyone any harm. And like you say, if it helps younger people to give them that bit more determination and a better insight, well then again, it's only going to be a positive thing for the GAA moving forward.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, Aaron. And just from an inter-county point of view, it was a big win for Armagh over Wicklow there at the Athletic Grounds, limiting Wicklow to really only 2 points. Now, considering Wicklow had scored 115 and 112 in their previous two games, a bit of a shock for you guys, no doubt.
Yeah, it was. I think what we were heading into the game was we were really keen on producing a massive performance, basically to, I suppose, set us on a good foot again after such a poor opening championship game for us against Cavan. Obviously, we took a lot of criticism, both players and management, for the manner in which we went out, and we'd worked very hard for the 6 weeks where we had the break in between. And with regards to the game itself, I would have to say, and I think we got two probably fortuitous enough goals at the start of the game and set us up really well. Then once we had tagged on a few points more or less straight after, it left it very hard for Wicklow to get going. And it's just like anything else, if you can see the momentum slipping away from you early in a game, and particularly with them being away from home, it can be hard to get back into it. And from a positive point of view, We played some lovely football. We, I suppose, improved a hell of a lot more on our game plan and our team play from what we had shown in our first championship game. So that's something that we can take into our next match. But I think we're pretty sure at this stage that we can take nobody for granted, considering how poor our championship form has been this past 3 or 4 years. So we've another good draw. We're heading to Carrickenshannon now Sunday week. It's our first time ever been there in championship football, so I suppose it's exciting enough to get back out on the road and see if we can improve on last week's performance and see if we can take us another step in the championship.
Yeah, there'll be a bit of confidence no doubt in the Armagh lads going forward, and Leitrim of course defeated by London the second time around. They'll probably looking to hit back, but surely the confidence you guys have taken out of the last game and particularly the strength in the squad, surely you guys have this one.
Yeah, well, I think that's the big thing that came out of the weekend is the confidence that boys will have taken from winning a championship game. Unfortunately, it's just now 2 years since we had won a game. We actually beat Wicklow and Aucrum 2 years ago. Since then, we lost the following week against Tyrone. We lost our two championship games last year against Tyrone and Roscommon. We'd also lost our first championship game this year. So I think all of that sort of eats in the boys' psyche. People maybe start doubting themselves, start doubting the squad and that. So the fact that we got a win last week, albeit we know we got off to the dream start, but I think in looking back on it, a lot of the stuff that we wanted to work on happened. We can see that it works if we do it at championship intensity as a team, and like I say, that's something we're going to look to build on. And I think the fact that Leitrim, they're going to be massively disappointed having lost out in the chance of getting the provincial final, it's something I'm sure they would have been targeting all year. I know their main marksman, Evan Mulligan, he's picked up an injury as well, so it's how they bounce back from the disappointment, and that they would have seen themselves maybe in a Connacht final and now they have to regroup. They've only 2 weeks to do it. So that's obviously something that we're going to need to try and play on and try and get a good start again. But that's, I suppose, again, that's just entirely up to us and what attitude and mindset we bring to Carrickenshannon.
Yeah, absolutely. And no doubt you guys will be looking to build on the momentum, and it'll be good to see you guys have a good run in the qualifiers this time round. And just before I let you go there, Aaron, looking outside your own county, who do you think is the team to beat this year in the football championship?
Well, I think after the weekend, obviously after their league win, Dublin were highly impressive throughout the league campaign, and sort of everyone had been tipping them after the league final, even though this was just scraped over the line against Tyrone and maybe hadn't been as impressive as what they had looked during the starting games in the league. At the weekend against Kildare, they just seemed to bring the whole thing to a new level. The pace and the athleticism they had around Croke Park was unbelievable. It was a game that I thought was going to be very close, because I know Kieran personally, and I would have known that he would have had his squad in an unbelievable shape and full of belief. But on top of that, I suppose you have your usual Cork, Kerry, Donegal. But one team who I would probably see as being a dark horse would be Mayo. I think they're definitely going about the business in a very professional manner. I think the fact that they lost last year's All-Ireland final has actually made them a mentally stronger outfit now. I think they're just building nicely. I think they're probably pacing themselves to make sure come All-Ireland quarter-final that they're peaking and hitting Croke Park at pace. Just Andy Moran back now from injury that they didn't have in last year's All-Ireland final, and I know they have a few other injuries, but I think if they can get a full squad of men out, particularly up front, that they may well turn out to be the dark horses for the season.
Absolutely, it'll be very interesting to see. And you mentioned Kieran, and of course, you know, the likes of Justin McNulty and Enda McNulty, highly involved in teams around the country. Yeah, could you see yourself in the distant future now, Aaron, perhaps going into management, being another one of these Armagh football managers that grab a team?
Definitely. I'll not be walking away from Gaelic football whenever I retire playing, but inter-county football is not really something I've ever thought about, and I definitely have already got involved with underage teams within Crossmaglen. And that's something that I would like to see myself getting involved in straight away, is seeing if I can get in and maybe help out with some of our under 12s or 14s. I did a bit of work with the minors there last year. So I think, first of all, I'd like to maybe get involved with them. And you never know where it takes you, but I think I'd like to cut my teeth with the club and see if I can give a bit back to them, and then see what happens after that. But hopefully I'm a few years away from that yet.
Absolutely, there's no doubt about it. Well, listen, Aaron, thanks a million for joining us on the programme. We wish you all the success going forward in the championship and with Pip's charity, and indeed training at the Elvery's youth camps. Thanks a million.
Not a problem. Thank you, Dave.
You're listening to Talking GAA with Dave O'Grady. If you want to promote anything, get involved with the show, or showcase any of your GAA events, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Talk to you soon. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by freelance GAA correspondent Colleen Duffy. Colleen, thanks for joining me. I suppose, looking at the football championship, one of the games of the week was, in fact, the Dubs win over Kildare. I thought at the start of the game it was going to be something of a real crunch match leading up to the end, but as a lot of people predicted before the game, the Dubs pulled away right at the end. The killer goal in the end of the first half really did the business. And what was your assessment of it? A terrific performance by Dublin.
Pretty clinical, and you have to be impressed by the way Dublin came back after that start by Kildare. It was probably like a hurling match, I suppose, in that respect, in that you don't normally see a team go behind by so much early on and then win so emphatically. But I suppose Dublin obviously in a happy place going into the Leinster final. It'll be interesting to see what Meath can put up to them, but certainly very clinical up front, and right from the first goal that they got until Owen O'Gara's finish at the end, they were sublime. And I suppose it just shows the character that's in this Dublin team to come back. Last year, perhaps in the championship, they came through games sluggishly and then were found out in the end against Mayo. But they're showing character already this year, and it's building up to be quite an interesting Leinster final.
Yeah, the whole argument of Leinster football now rears its head again. I know the lads on the Sunday game panel were saying that perhaps Dublin should have a handicap going into these games, you know, see how many points and goals they can score. But if you're looking at the goal chances ratio that the Dubs had, it is quite scary, particularly with that forward line and indeed the very fast half backs that Dubs have.
20 odd goal scoring chances in that game, and to take only 4, but to create 20 is something else. And particularly against a team like Kildare, who were supposed to be set up quite well to challenge Dublin, and many had hoped that this was going to be a very close match. I suppose if you look at the Dublin defence, and in particular the likes of Darren Daly, Johnny Cooper standing up to the fore, Jack McCaffrey, you know, Dublin's young guns are coming together quite well alongside the established forces, I suppose, of the likes of Ger Brennan and that. But if one looks through that Dublin team at the weekend, there's quite a lot of young faces. It's not the side that won in 2011 by any means. And I suppose the other thing as well is Stephen Cluxton kicking 4 points, 4 from place balls, including 3 45s. You know, you can't underestimate Cluxton's influence on this side either. Of course, he is the Dublin captain this year, and while Manny had said he was a quiet person in terms of media and everything else after it had been announced that he was the captain Dublin in this campaign, where his leadership qualities are shown are where it's needed most. And again, on the pitch last Sunday, he showed it quite well, leaking a goal early on, but Dublin really built up a brick wall quite quickly in defence, and, you know, unstoppable. And when you manage to keep a team like Kildare out by so much and to win so comprehensively, you're automatically talking about Dublin for All-Ireland semi-final and final appearances this year. And, you know, at the moment, they look like a team on fire to take All-Ireland title, but you know that can't be taken for granted. We still have 2 odd months of championship action or so to follow, but really and truly they are well built up for it, and it wouldn't be surprising if they were to lift Sam at the end of the summer. The guys, a lot of them inexperienced, they have the experience underage, of course, but they're really stepping up to the plate. And Kieran Kilkenny was super, I thought, as well, for Dublin last weekend. And he's going to be a big force for Dublin, I reckon, again,
yeah,
for the rest of the summer.
Kieran Kilkenny had a really great game. I think a lot of people have said it was his best game in a Dublin senior shirt so far. Long may that continue for Dubs fans. And, of course, they're going to be going up against Meath in the final. Meath defeated Wexford, but this might not be the hands-on-the-wire kind of match that we've come to expect when these two sides meet, considering the golfing class. I mean, we only have to look at the divisional status in the National League of the two teams.
That's true, and mentioning Meade's game against Wexford, a 5-point win in the end. Meade's really turned on the style in the second half. You know, Wexford had thrown a lot at them in the first half, but one thing that was surprising, I suppose, from a Wexford perspective was their lack of goal scoring threat. It didn't seem like a typical Wexford display. We've known Wexford over the last few years to score plenty of goals. They got two in their previous match, and really that was probably one thing that was lacking from the Slaney Siders. And I know, talking to Andy Doyle this week, he was talking in particular about that and how that was absent, and it'll be one thing that they will require against Longford next time out if they're to get one over the Midlanders. But going back to Meath, I should say, Mickey Newman, superb player. I've seen him in action a lot with NUI Maynooth in the last couple of years, and he's really come to the fore. 9 points all from place balls, I know, last weekend, but he's a sublime dead ball kicker. And then we've seen that pace from Eamon Wallace. But what about Graham Riley? 4 points from play. Graham Riley has this ability to switch on and switch off during games. But when he switches on, he really switches on. And he certainly was one of those players who stood up quite well. An interesting battle between himself and Brian Malone, of course. Malone scoring 2 points from defence. Both, incidentally, were shortlisted for the Sunday game man of the match. It just goes to show you maybe the particular battle that was had there. But Meade, I saw them against Wicklow as well in Aucrim a few weeks ago. They're in a right place at the moment. Meade football is just bursting for something big. I know they took the Leinster title in 2010, a controversial goal at the end, of course, who will forget it, against Louth. But I think this Leinster final will hopefully live up to previous Dublin Meade clashes, and that we won't see as an emphatic a gap, an emphatic victory as we did for Dublin against Kildare.
We'll hope Pat Spillane is wrong on that occasion. He predicted something like it won't be any less than 10 points of a Dublin win. But as you said, Meath are rebuilding, and this could be the platform for the young guns to show their form. Now, Colleen, also in Ulster, I know Jim McGuinness was down in Clonus to watch rather a dull but close affair between Monaghan and Cavan. Monaghan winning out by a point. I think a lot of people had tipped Cavan going into this game, but it wasn't to be. Monaghan getting through to an Ulster final, and you could just see what it meant to the players and management after the game.
Certainly, and whoever was going to come through this match, it was going to be a big deal, and Monaghan just shading it in the end. But I suppose you can't place your house on Cavan to win games, and I suppose that was what happened. People in the end fully backing Cavan, maybe they were perhaps slight favourites going into this game, but you can never write off a team like Monaghan. Great character, players like Colin Walsh, of course, DIT Sigerson winning captain this year, Darren Hughes, Kieran Hughes, the huge experience on the side, Conor McManus with 6 points, and of course Paul Finlay coming off the bench, and he got 2 points from Freeze. There's great experience in Monaghan. Cavan, I suppose, are looking at their under 21 teams of recent years and the great record that's been done there, and while they're coming through, perhaps maybe another year or two we'll see them over the line in the championship. But one fears in some respects for Monaghan against Donegal. I know there's a lot of talk about Donegal and everything else, and they've really had to utilise their panel to date in the championship this year, you know, showing that strength and depth, but they've been emptying out the tank, so to speak, and it'll be interesting to see what will happen come Ulster final time. Carl Lacey apparently is back in the frame now,
yeah,
so that's good
huge
news
positive,
for Jimmy McGuinness. But in terms of Monaghan, I suppose a close battle with Cavan at the weekend, and that's going to certainly stand them well. Just 1 point in it at the end. And really, Monaghan, I suppose, will be thankful for Chrissy McGuinness's first half goal, because that was a real difference for most of this game. And, you know, just thankful that they held out in the end.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting Ulster final. There's no doubt about that. And Colleen, Connacht Football, I know we do have a lot of Leitrim listeners to the programme. And indeed, we've had Colin Regan and other former Leitrim players on the programme before, but I think from a neutral point of view, a lot of GAA fans would have slightly been up for London, maybe just to see a little bit of history being made in Connacht Football. London, of course, true to Connacht Final, where they'll take on Mayo, but at the same time, in their game against Leitrim in Roscommon, I think the wind blows is probably a sentence you could use in that game. It was really a game of two halves.
I was just going to use that cliche and you took it right out of my mouth there. But certainly both of those cliches rang true on Sunday, and I was keeping a very close eye in this one. And I have to admit, like most people, I think we were in London's camp. Not that it wouldn't have been great either for Leitrim to get to a Connacht final, but of course there was such a build-up to that game, of course, after the drawn encounter, that in reality, I suppose many people were going for London, but they only snuck it through, of course, in the end, 2-11 to 1-13 at the finish. But what a game of two halves. That wind was certainly a telling factor. 2-10 to a point ahead, and really London looking superb at that stage. And one was wondering, were Leitrim going to turn up? And I suppose people on Twitter and that were questioning the dominance of London, but in reality there was a very strong win. But the goals from Greg Crowley, of course, from Westmeath, and Kieran McCallion, of course, the Derryman, that set them up quite nicely. But amazingly, a great turnaround from Leitrim in the second half. 8 points from Kevin Conlon, all from frees. We saw Robbie Lowe getting 3 points, and James Glancy got their only goal, an excellent effort. It was real stuff at the death. And I know, talking to some of the London guys, I'm friends with a couple of them, and really heart in the mouth stuff at the end. It was just an incredible result for the GA, and I suppose off the back of a weekend where we saw the Dublin Hurlers winning and everything else, and the most games in the GA Senior Championships this year were last weekend.
The biggest Sunday game in history as well.
Yeah, there's headlines all over the place. It was really hard to do justice to what was an excellent weekend of Gaelic games. But I'm just looking forward now. I'm going back to London next week to get a couple of interviews ahead of the Connacht final. And I'm just looking forward to the buzz that's going to be over there, because it was something else. I know a lot of people were huddled around the TV screens in Ruislip on Sunday afternoon, thanks to Premier Sports, who broadcast the game live. And, you know, it was interesting stuff, and long may it continue. They're into the last 12 of the All-Ireland series now, and who knows how far more they can go. But you never know what could happen. All the bookies are going for Mayo, and rightly so. They've the experience of the last couple of years. But just for these guys to be in a Connacht final, it's something else, and it really has been a fairy tale somewhere so far.
Yeah, a lot of people talking about the London players' antics in the dressing room after the match, singing that old "I get knocked down but I get up again" song. Terrific to see, and we do wish them well going forward. Now, Colleen, I think the qualifiers proved very interesting as well, and in particular the games that I was watching myself. I was following the Armagh, the crushing win they had over Wicklow, 221 to 2 points. And of course Tyrone then went down to Tullamore and defeated Offaly 127 to 8 points. Surely for the likes of Wicklow and Offaly, these kind of defeats can't be good for them.
Can't be good, but at the same time, there's always a story behind the final scorelines in games. And I was down in Tullamore myself in O'Connor Park, and yes, it was a massacre. There's no point in saying otherwise. But when you look at the fact that Offaly were missing 10 players in total, including four who were gone off to America, then there was a few others who had been dropped off the panel just before the championship. And then there's the likes of Anton Sullivan, who was out through injury, had to get an operation on his shoulder and couldn't put it off any longer. It tells some of the story, but certainly Tyrone are in excellent form. There's no question about that, and it's going to be interesting now when they get back into action in the All-Ireland qualifiers against Roscommon as well. It's going to be interesting to see how that one will go in particular, because Tyrone are a wounded animal after that defeat against Donegal, it's fair to say, and really Mickey Hart has got them fired up for what they will hope will be another a long championship campaign. The record stacks in favour of at least one team coming through from the first round right through to the All-Ireland quarter-final. So for the likes of Tyrone and Armagh, they'll be hoping that. I was a bit more surprised, perhaps, that Armagh were such emphatic winners against Wicklow, because as I said earlier, I saw Wicklow against Meath and they really put it up to Meath in that game in Aughrim, and I thought there was more to see from them during the summer. But Harry Murphy has to be a disappointed man after that result in the Athletic Grounds, because in reality Wicklow should be far closer than that to Armagh. But you were talking about the gulf in class between league divisions, and maybe that's starting to become apparent a bit more so from these qualifiers and what we've seen from the first round.
Yeah, and just before I let you go, Colleen, I have to ask you about your own county. They were used slightly as guinea pigs down in Carlow, Dr. Cullen Park. I was listening to a few people interviewed after the game, and I think the overall perception was rather positive. People were happy enough to try this out on a Friday night.
In general terms, the satisfaction rate probably just passed in terms of dominance. I think, you know, it was worth trying. It's something that management and everything else seem to be happy with. Some players a bit disappointed, I suppose. Some have understanding bosses work-wise, others don't, and that was certainly apparent in both the Laois and Carlow camps over the weekend. The experiment worth trying. It's not something I think that will happen too often in the future in GA. I suppose one thing that had been overlooked maybe in a lot of sectors prior to this was that Offaly played Limerick about 10 years ago in a senior hurling qualifier down in Limerick. It was midweek, owing to the fact that the Limerick footballers had gone to a replay in one of their games, and there was dual players involved in both panels. And at that time, there was no song and dance about jobs or anything else. But I suppose we are now in a recession, and that's obviously going to come to the fore. But I don't see this as being a regular thing in terms of the GA. It's worth trying out, but I suppose in future terms, it's also worth maybe giving a bit of extra notice about, because no one was expecting a Friday night match. It got landed on the players, and you know, that's something we don't want to see again.
Yeah, certainly not. Well, listen, Colleen Duffy, thanks a million for taking us through all the football in last week's championship.
No problem, David.
You're listening to Talking GAA with Dave O'Grady. If you want to promote anything, get involved with the show, or showcase any of your GAA events, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Talk to you soon. Now, the Hurling Championship has taken a bizarre but quite entertaining twist. Cork take on Limerick in the Munster final, while Galway meet Dublin in Leinster. We're delighted to be joined by former Tipperary hurler, former Galway manager and sports journalist with the Connacht Tribune, John McIntyre. Thanks a million, John, for joining us. It's been a crazy championship so far. Looking at Leinster first, I suppose, one of the major talking points this week is the Dubs' replay win over Kilkenny. They say, John, that you only get one chance against the Cats, but credit to the Dubs, I suppose, for breaking the mould.
Well, first of all, Dave, it's the championship, the hurling championship we've been waiting for years, because it's lost its sense of predictability. With Limerick beating Tipperary in the Munster championship, Clare falling to Cork, another surprise result as well. Then you had Offaly putting it up to Kilkenny, Laois running Galway very close. And overall, there seems to be a levelling out of standards. But of course, the high point of the title race so far has been Dublin's great achievement in beating Dublin, or in beating Kilkenny for the first time in over 70 years. And to do it, I think, in a replay makes the results stand up to intense scrutiny. It wasn't a once-off. They had, you know, you could argue that they should have completed the job the first day. And as Anthony Daly was saying last week in the build-up to the replay, nearly everybody was saying to him, you've blown it, you've lost your chance. But if anything, all these games coming in quick succession are improving Dublin no end. And there was no fluke about it in the replay. You can say Kilkenny were injury hit and tired and battle weary, but they've lost so few matches that when they do, you just have to, you know, give due respect and due recognition to the team that pulls it off. And of course, the big difficulty though for Dublin will be to get back to Torre Farm in time for the test of Galway on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned there regarding Kilkenny being injury hit. I mean, I know it's probably not an excuse, but they could argue that, you know, the likes of Henry Shefflin, Michael Fennelly and that, I mean, two quality players, no doubt some of the best in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. But you can only play what you have. And at the end of the day, Kilkenny knew they were going to be missing those two influential players. They've been cornerstones of Kilkenny's success, ongoing success, for the last number of years. But I don't think it should take away in any way from Dublin's achievement. They had to go down to Portlaoise for the second time in a week. They had to front up to the All-Ireland champions. They had a bad experience against them the previous year when there was a lot of hype about Anthony Daly and his men, and you know, it's a great achievement for them. And I thought the Dublin players and management showed some maturity after the game in not getting too carried away by what they had achieved. It's okay for supporters to be jumping around like madmen, but Dublin know that if they go out on Sunday and fail to produce a performance against Galway, they could be well beaten, and very quickly their great achievement against Kilkenny will be consigned to the history book.
Yeah, that was one of the points I think that Anthony Daly had mentioned after the match when he was interviewed about the Galway game. He said, usually if you beat Wexford in a replay and then beat Kilkenny in a replay, you should pretty much have a Leinster title. But the Dubs now meet Galway, and Galway beat Laois back in the middle of June. Would that be a good or bad thing, John, for Galway? Because some would say the Dubs have the momentum, and others would say that Galway will be the fresher team.
You know, there's benefit in both arguments there. You can see why Dublin would want to keep the momentum going 5 weeks in a row. They're winning, so players don't think about it being their fifth weekend in a row to be out. You could be out 12 weekends in a row if you keep winning. It's only when you lose for the first time, suddenly then the hectic schedule becomes an issue. Galway weren't impressive against Laois, but in fairness, Seamus Plunkett had set up his team very well that day. They had a defensive template and pushed Galway all the way. Anthony Cunningham and his mentors have been struggling to solve the full-back and centre-back problem positions, and they have a couple of injury worries as well. And but going back 12 months ago, they didn't show up particularly well against Westmeath and Mullingar, and 4 or 5 weeks later they came out and just destroyed Kilkenny. So as I know from experience, Galway are capable of just turning up on the day and being in the zone, and it doesn't matter who they're playing. On the other hand, they can turn up and not even reach their potential. And there is a lot of uncertainty in Galway this week about, first of all, the makeup of the team, but what kind of a performance they're going to deliver. And they are still very heavily dependent on getting the supply into Joe Canning.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting Leinster final. There's no doubt about that. Now, John, looking at Munster, Limerick take on Cork in the final. People were a little bit surprised that Cork got through, but it's probably fair to say that they did go about their business quietly, and it's worked to their benefit.
No question about that. They came under the radar, which is unusual for a Cork team. I suppose Corks have been struggling over the past 4 or 5 years. They had a number of injuries ahead of that game, headed by Paddy O'Sullivan. They've since lost Brian Murphy, which is certainly going to be no help to them the further the championship progresses. But as we all know, Cork are like mushrooms. They can spring from nowhere overnight. They have a very high-profile management team over them. But Clare on the day didn't help themselves. I mean, we all know David Fitzgerald is a really tactical manager and that, but it looked as though his players were ensnared by their tactical approach. They were following a very rigorous pattern of working the ball out of the defence, playing a two-man full forward line. And that's fine if you're allowed to do it, but Cork attack them up the field and put the Clare backs under pressure. There was a huge turnover of possession. And hopefully Clare will have learned the lesson from that experience when they play Laois and Ennis at the weekend. And because they have good players. They've won two All-Ireland under-21 titles in the past 3 or 4 years. There's plenty of talent there. But, you know, young, basically, as I think Nicky English wrote in the Irish Times a few weeks ago, hurling is still a relatively simple game. And the quicker you can get the ball up the field to the opposition danger area, the better chance you have of scoring. I suppose what I'm trying to say is Clare playing around with the ball too much, trying to engineer this overlap, and certainly that approach let them down badly against Cork, and they've paid the price for it by being out of the Munster Championship.
Yeah, they did indeed, and Limerick defeated your own county, Tipperary. A huge chance now for Limerick, I suppose, going forward in the Munster final.
It's great for hurling. First of all, Dublin beating Kilkenny, and Limerick coming out of the doldrums to overcome Tipperary. Typical fire and brimstone performance from Limerick. They had to try the sort of working the ball out of defence approach. You know, there's a balance. You know, there's no point a player, a half-back, booming a ball 90 yards down the field to heavy traffic. I mean, if there's a player 20 yards in front of you and he's loose, get the ball out to him and work it from there. But Tipperary were disappointing. They went from 4-4 at a critical stage of the second half. You would have expected them to drive on from there, but they didn't. And they were deservedly beaten in the end. And, you know, perhaps on reflection, maybe Eamon O'Shea, you know, his tactic of sort of switching around the forward line from game to game meant that they weren't as settled as they would have liked, and maybe the six forwards haven't been playing long enough. Their best six forwards haven't been playing often enough with each other. But they have a massive challenge going down to Northern Park. Can you imagine what Brian Cody saying to his Kilkenny players this week? Are you going to let our most bitter rivals from across the border come down in front of our own people on our own pitch and finish us off? So there is going to be a massive kick in Kilkenny. Despite what's happened to them, despite their struggles against Dublin over the weekend, or the last 2 weekends, and despite the likelihood that neither Michael Fennelly or Henry Shefflin will be fit enough to play. But having said all that, this is a great opportunity for Tipperary, and if you're not good enough to take advantage, well then, the All-Ireland win of Tipperary in 2010, we're just going to have to say, right, maybe we're lucky to get one from them, because they just simply haven't trained on.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, a sellout at Nolan Park, it's terrific, as you said, for hurling, John, and it's very rare we see this in the qualifier stages, but as you say, I mean, it would be an incredible achievement all the same if Kilkenny or Tipperary could go to Kilkenny's backyard and pull out something.
I'm not sure it would be an incredible achievement. I believe it would be a victory of substance. At the end, you know, the bottom line here is that Tipperary would be fancying themselves to beat Kilkenny the way their fortunes have gone since the league final. There was some speculation that Tipperary weren't at their best or held something back in Northern Park a few weeks ago in that match. But, you know, I think if you're trying to be, you know, if you're not playing it straight in big matches like that, you're asking for trouble down the line. So I would have seen no reason why Tipperary would have been holding something back in that match, especially after their humiliation in last year's All-Ireland semi-final. And obviously, Tipperary will come into the game a little bit fresher, with a point to prove, and I suppose in, from that perspective they're in the same position as Kilkenny. Both teams will be fighting for their championship lives. There's no safety net, and with a sellout crowd of 24,000, Northern Park is the only place to be this weekend. And the unfortunate thing about it, Dave, is that it's overshadowed the Leinster final the following day.
It's true, there's no doubt about that. And just finally on the hurling front, John, I suppose Waterford, they might not be so used to going around the country in the qualifiers at this stage. They did a job to Westmeath there. It was looking good for Westmeath for a while, but it wasn't to be. A couple of good players are putting their hands up in Waterford now, it's probably fair to say.
Yeah, Maurice Shannon, for instance, has really taken on the leadership baton since their exit to Clare. And Waterford, you know, they have been there or thereabouts for the last decade. And I know they've lost a number of marquee players, but their loss tends to be exaggerated, or the loss of players who've given great service and are heading for their mid-30s, because a young fella coming in will be able to travel. And believe you me now, even to win a club junior B or a county junior B championship, if your team doesn't have pace, they might as well stay at home. And young fellas are you know, they're vigorous and they're able to cover ground. And while the Waterford attack is seriously devoid of experience, even alone for the fact that Seamus Prendergast is still around, you know, they overcame a tricky assignment against Offaly, did what they had to do against Westmeath. And, you know, young players tend to pick up experience very quickly, and there'll be no pushover for anybody that they're managing. Michael Ryan, I think, is the most underrated manager in the business. I mean, when he was appointed, I don't think it electrified the Waterford hurling supporters. His demise has been predicted on several occasions, and he's still hanging in there, and I think he's getting the best out of this team.
Yeah, he is, and long may that continue. Just before I let you go there, John, I know in your column in the Connacht Tribune you've been writing about the Galway footballers, and I suppose it's great to see them finally break the mould, and hopefully now they can get a bit of momentum in the qualifiers.
Yeah, it's funny, the only match was at last weekend was Tipperary and Galway in the football championship. I've obviously been a Tipperary man, and I don't broadcast it too loudly, but I actually played football for Tipperary as well, and I liked the game. You know, if somebody told you before the match that Galway would only lead by a point at half time playing with the wind, and that Tipperary would get the last five scores of the match, you'd be saying to yourself, my God, this is the lowest of the low for Galway. But they had a strong third quarter. They're a team seriously lacking in confidence. And, you know, they've had some desperately narrow defeats in the qualifiers over the past 5 or 6 years, getting beaten narrowly by teams that traditionally shouldn't lace their boots. So it's a confidence thing for Galway. They are devoid of quality as well, to be honest. But, you know, small steps for a team like Galway. They have a great tradition. They're going to beat Waterford this weekend in Pearse Stadium. And, you know, players, it's all about momentum. And two wins for Galway in the qualifiers will be breaking new ground, even if it is against two of the winners of the Munster Championship. And after that, maybe they might get the weakest team again, and they might suddenly end up in Croke Park, where they haven't been for the best part of a decade. And that's the great thing about the GAA season so far, especially in hurling. None of us can say hand in heart that Kilkenny are going to beat Tip, or Tip are going to beat Kilkenny, Dublin are going to beat Galway, and or vice versa. But it's going back to the Galway-Dublin game. I was tracking the match odds last Monday morning, and Galway opened at 4-7, and Dublin were 7-4. And by the end of the day, Galway were 2-5. So the professional GAA punters took the view that Galway were overpriced, if you know what I mean. Mm. This is good value for a bet, that even though Dublin have beaten Kilkenny, the All-Ireland champions, the expectation is that Galway's chances have improved of winning the Leinster final by playing the team that beat Kilkenny rather than playing Kilkenny, if you follow my trip.
Exactly, absolutely.
So that's just the way it is. And I wouldn't write off Dublin, but the one concern I would have for them, they have been playing seven players in the back and maybe kind of a third midfielder. That's grand in a relatively tight field like O'Connor Park or Tullamore. But can they get away with a similar tactic in Croke Park? Because if they do, you're asking kind of there's two guys in the full forward line to nearly cover 100 acres.
Yeah, it's a big ask for Dublin. Well, it all remains to be seen. Listen, John McIntyre, thanks a million for joining me. And as you were saying about Tipperary football, I think there's going to be a pretty big future ahead of them, considering the success that they have had at minor level and that. So onwards and upwards, as they say. John, thanks a million.
No problem, Dave.
Well, that's it for this week on the show. I'm Dave O'Grady. My thanks to Colleen Duffy, John McIntyre and Aaron Kernan. Be sure to tell us what you think. Drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com.